What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Happy Monday morning. Week 3 of the NFL is just about finished. We got Steelers, Buccaneers, and that means that we're going to take an hour now and just troll Ryan Wilson about whether or not the Steelers will fall to 2-1. What are they? 1-1. Whatever. 0-2-1 is the possibility on the table for the Steelers. Much darker times for other NFL teams, including the Patriots and the 49ers. We'll get to all the Week 3 action from Sunday in a second. Joining me here, this is Will. I'm Will Brinson, by the way. I'm your host. This is a daily NFL show, so you should subscribe, rate, and review. Joined on the phone, we'll go in order of authority around these parts. Ryan Wilson first. How's it going, buddy?
Thank you for patronizing me. I'll take it.
You're welcome. John Breach, how you hanging?
If you were going by who brushes their teeth the most, that would have been me.
And Sean Wagner, how's it going, buddy?
It's actually Wagner McGough, and this is a disturbing trend that you keep doing where you're cutting off half my last name.
Get a shorter last name.
I just didn't need to address it right now because I feel like I'm getting shortchanged here. Save me for last, and then you don't even say my full name.
Yeah, that is insulting you twice, and I apologize for that. I am going to let you.
It's okay, Will Brin.
But mine doesn't have a dash. Anyway, this is not what people are here to talk. Yes, John.
We've only got an hour. I understand why Brinson cut that short. You know, we can't just be spilling out everybody's names.
That's right. Exactly. I'm trying to cut time and get to the games. First up, by the way, Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers, Sean. It appears that Jimmy G tore his ACL. That is what the 49ers fear. Likely season-ending injury will be a major upset if that's not the case. Speaking of torn ACLs, by the way, my dog is... George just came up into the office, and he's decided to lick his snake wound and like chew at it, and it's gotten a little hairy. His leg might fall off in this podcast, just like Jimmy G's leg might fall off, Sean, which would be concerning, but it's probably not going to happen. Clearly a devastating blow. If you're the 49ers, how worried are you about the long-term state of the 49ers with Jimmy G missing the season?
What I think is interesting is that if he does miss the season, he's going to go into 2019 with 10 starts since he entered the NFL. And he's getting paid, $25 million a year. And what I also think is interesting is that if you look at his contract, 2019 for him is going to be a contract year. And I know it sounds like insane to already be talking about, like, oh, what if Jimmy G doesn't work out in San Francisco? But this guy's played in 10 games, or started 10 games in his career. After 2019, they can cut him and save $20 million. So if he comes back in 2019,
Did you just say they can cut Jimmy Garoppolo?
After 2019, there's an out. If they cut him in 2020, I think his cap hit is at like 26, and his dead cap's at like $4 million. And so what I'm saying is, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but this is a guy who started 10 games in his career. He's going to enter next season recovering from a torn ACL. And if for some reason, I don't think it will happen, but if the 49ers are a dumpster fire, like at the very least, you're maybe like restructuring his deal or cutting him.
Well, you know what? I thought we'd get some hot takes this week with the Patriots losing. Certainly didn't think one of them would be coming from Sean, John, with him saying that the 49ers should cut Jimmy Garoppolo. Do you think CJ Beathard can help to lead them to the playoffs?
I do not. I watched the 49ers last season when Jimmy Garoppolo was not on the team for the first 9 or 10 weeks, and they were the worst football team that I have ever seen in my entire life. That's what I expect to see out of them over the final 13 weeks of the year. So 49ers are going to top out at about 2-14 without Jimmy. Hey, that's good because they get a draft pick. Maybe they can, obviously they're not going to take a quarterback because they have Jimmy. And I do think it's a little crazy talk from Sean talking about releasing Jimmy. But I do think the 49ers season's over. So let's go ahead and write them off. And that's good news for the Cardinals because now maybe they won't finish in the basement of the NFC West.
For the record, I don't think even with Jimmy G this year, like to me, it's obviously a big injury and it lowers their like win total. But I didn't look at them as like a playoff team and I didn't see anything through the first 3 games with him to suggest that they were a playoff team. I think like that 5-0 run he had at the end of last year kind of made it seem like the 49ers were a little bit closer than we think they are. And I think the reality is that this is year 2 of a rebuild and Jimmy G can't solve everything. And I don't think he was solving everything. I mean, they were down 35-7 in the first half against the Chiefs. And I know they cut it to like 11 and it ended up being a somewhat close game, but all that was kind of in garbage time. And I think they went into Kansas City and they got blown out with Jimmy G.
They did.
Okay. But if Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback for the 49ers today, who wins the game?
I have no idea, and Jimmy G is the quarterback of the Chiefs.
No, the Chiefs don't have a quarterback. I think
the Chiefs don't have quarterbacks.
Here's the thing that concerns me is that if you look at quarterbacks in the Kyle Shanahan system, it typically takes them like 2 years to really get rolling. Like Matt Ryan had a bad first year in Kyle Shanahan's system. And once you master that system, you start to really get clicking. Well, Jimmy G's now going to spend the next 6 to 9 months, not working on his offensive mastery of that system. He's going to spend the next 6 to 9 months rehabbing his knee. And so the runway for the 49ers building up to this 2019 potential playoff run, and I think everybody, like you pointed out, Sean, they're a year away anyway. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you have to worry about, you know, will you be ready in time, for 2019, and will you be ready to operate the offense at the level that Kyle Shanahan wants you to?
What's the explanation for RG3? He was red hot to start the Shanahan era, and then he just went downhill and took the coaching staff with him.
The read option.
Yeah, but I mean, he got hurt. That also had something to do with it. He was sort of the reverse of, I guess, whatever else success Shanahan's had with sort of, you know, regular drop back passers. I don't agree with Sean's take on Jimmy Garoppolo. I think going 5-0 is actually a great indication that your team is probably better than it was when it was 1-10.
I didn't say he didn't make them better.
That's exactly what you just said. Rewind
that
the tape.
Jimmy G doesn't make the 49ers better.
Rewind the tape, Brinson. You said
I said.
You said.
Oh, hold on, Sean. Let me rewind it. I don't think that Jimmy G makes the 49ers better. Yep, you said it, Sean.
Yeah,
sorry.
See, there we go. But I know what you mean, Sean. But my point is, I think that they were right to invest all that money in him this offseason. You had to pay him based on those five games where he went 5-0 after Beathard. And who was Blank Abbott on the team last year? Was he the one that was terrible? I can't even remember, but whoever was before Beathard, as John pointed out, the 49ers were incredibly difficult to even watch. So I don't have any issue with what they did in the offseason or the trade, obviously, to get him last October 31st for a second-round pick. But
it was Hoyer.
Yeah, they struggled to start the year. They weren't great.
It was Brian Hoyer, by the way.
And, oh, gosh. How easy.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this is a problem. The 49ers are a team that you're going to fade now. And on the other side of the ball, Patrick Mahomes – that's a team you can't fade. Like, they're now 3-0, and they were 6.5-point favorites in Kansas City. Everybody took the 49ers because they believed that, you know, that Chiefs defense would give them problems. I actually thought the Chiefs defense did a pretty good job getting after Garoppolo. They still should get Eric Berry back at some point. And the next 2 weeks are going to be big in terms of deciding just how high the ceiling is for Patrick Mahomes this season, because he gets the Broncos and the Jaguars defenses. We think good defenses. The Broncos haven't been very good against the pass this year, but could potentially, you know, present a problem for Patrick Mahomes. What are the odds, Breach, that Patrick Mahomes slows down in the next 2 weeks? Because he was incredible. Again, they get out to a huge start and just kind of slow played it down the stretch and held off the 49ers and won easily.
I would say the odds are 0%.
Okay.
I don't see Patrick Mahomes slowing down at all. He's already got, 13 touchdown passes, set the NFL record. He might get 13 more touchdown passes in the next 2 weeks. And here's the thing, like, if he gets through these next 2 weeks and throws, let's say, just 3 touchdown passes a game, he's got the Broncos defense and he's got Jacksonville's defense. So you have two of the best defenses in the NFL. And if he just shreds them, then, you know, nobody's going to stop Patrick Mahomes. So I do not expect the Kansas City Chiefs to slow down at all. And honestly, you know, watching the Patriots tonight, they're supposed to be a contender. Watching Jacksonville today, they're supposed to be a contender. The Chiefs look hands down, not even close, that anyone's even close to them, like the best team in the AFC.
I'm with you. Hey, look.
I will say this, though. The Chiefs lost to the Titans in the playoffs, and they look like...
with a different quarterback.
Was Alex Smith.
Alex
man.
Smith was playing... You guys want to like crap on Alex Smith, but he was playing out of his mind for most of his time with Andy Reid when they were
Marcus
together.
Mariota threw a touchdown pass to himself. How can you beat that?
He wasn't doing what Mahomes. I think Like, I think he wasn't, Sean. What Alex Smith was doing.
Well, no one's saying that, but
it's a completely different team a year ago. I don't think you can throw.
Oh, so you had the Titans. You had the Titans beating the Chiefs in that game.
I have no idea what I had, but
no, you didn't.
Why are we talking about that game? That game doesn't matter.
Well,
it does matter because the Chiefs start strong and they've been known to fade.
You're saying that just like it's an Andy Reid thing where like he has September.
Yeah. Well, look, it's worth noting that last season through three games against the Patriots, Eagles, and Chargers, three very good teams last year, Alex Smith completed 77.4% of his passes, 774 passing yards, that's 9.2 yards per attempt, 7 touchdowns, 0 interceptions for a 132.7 rate. We were talking about him as the MVP a quarter of the season in, and it's possible that we see a big drop-off from Patrick Mahomes. I mean, like, Alex Smith didn't throw his first pick until week 9. That's nuts. And Mahomes is operating at a really high level. I think he brings a different – I mean, obviously brings more – Alex Smith is athletic. Yeah, he brings more athleticism, more deep ball. I mean, like, he just does so much more well and has a much higher ceiling than Alex Smith. But I think at some point, and I think it's going to come in the next 2 weeks, if it does come, we're going to see a bump in the road in terms of how he plays. The Patriots saw a huge bump in the road on Sunday night, and I'm ready. Sean, you know what? You're full of hot takes tonight.
We just had Breach say Mahomes is going to throw 13 touchdowns in the next 2 weeks. I think I'm a level lower on the hot takes.
No, you said the 49ers should cut Jimmy Garoppolo.
I didn't. Yes. You guys are just putting words in my mouth the entire episode.
You said Alex Smith was terrible.
Yeah. also, Breach is currently, we're recording this podcast, and we're on Skype, and Breach is wearing a Zorro hat. So it's sort of hard to take anything he says like as a true heater. By the way, I'm drinking a delicious Sycamore Brewing Mountain Candy IPA. Pretty pleased with the distribution here in Raleigh that we got this lovely Charlotte beer here. Sean's chugging bourbon and screaming about Jimmy Garoppolo getting cut. No big deal. Do you have a thought on the Patriots dynasty being dead, Sean?
It's going to be the exact opposite of hot. Like, this is – we've seen this before. We saw it a couple years ago. I'm not at all worried about the Patriots. And they've got Edelman coming back. They got Josh Gordon. So, to me, I think they're going to get better. It like, wouldn't shock me if they lose to the Dolphins, but I think the AFC...
That would be shocking.
Is it still in that... You would be shocked?
If they lose at home to the Dolphins? Yeah.
Is it at home?
Yeah.
All right, fine. They usually lose in Miami.
Thanks for doing the homework, though.
Feisty Ryan tonight. Anyways,
feisty Ryan.
Somebody made Ryan mad. we've seen this before. I'm worried about their defense.
We have seen this before. They've lost two games in a row by double digits. That hasn't happened since December 2002, Sean. Wow.
So we've seen it
16 years.
So Sean hadn't seen it because Sean wasn't alive.
That was the layup. Come on.
By the way, Tom Brady, 14 of 26, 133 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. He was under fire by a bad Detroit defense a lot of the night, and even when he had time to throw. The secondary did a tremendous job. I mean, Matt Patricia outcoached Josh McDaniels in a bad way for McDaniels here. And, like, you could see it. They kept double-teaming Gronk and said, we're going to take away Gronk and make you beat us with Philip Dorsett and your pass-catching running backs. And the Patriots weren't able to do it. And Brady looked shook, and he got smoked on a big stage. I mean, this is an ugly, ugly loss for the Patriots. It's too straight. This is why they went out and traded for Josh Gordon. But I don't know that Josh Gordon, Ryan, is going to magically come in and make this Patriots team any better.
Yeah, we have plenty of examples of the Patriots taking flyers on guys who were discarded from other teams. Some with success. Randy Moss obviously was a huge success. He was gotten for a fourth round pick. Breach's guy Corey Dillon came in and had some success before that. But they also signed some guy named Albert Haynesworth, who I don't think worked out very well there. Chad Johnson didn't work out very well there. So Josh Gordon's track record is one of someone who gives zero Fs when it comes to work related stuff, and he doesn't show up or he shows up late. When he's not being suspended for, you know, substance abuse related stuff.
He's the Ryan Wilson of the.
He is the Ryan Wilson, a little handsomer of NFL football. So we'll see. I mean, there's really no reason for the Patriots not to do it. And there's a lot of reasons for the Browns, you know, not to do it as well. I mean, there's plenty of reason for the Patriots to do it. And the Browns sort of silly gave away what could be a great player to the Patriots. But I mean, the track record is spotty. That said, and I don't want to do this, but I do have to agree with Sean. I'm not really worried about the Patriots. They've started slow before. They were 1-2 back in 2012. They went 12-4. They went to the Super Bowl. They made it to the AFC Championship game, lost to the Ravens. And they started 2-2 in the last 3 or 4 years, and they both times went to the Super Bowl, 1-1 against the Seahawks and lost to the Falcons. Not Falcons, sorry. The last year they lost to the Eagles. So not a huge deal. Part of me wonders if it's even a conspiracy where Tom Belichick wanted to make Patricia look good, because we were last week, we were literally
Stop
having the conversation.
It. That's the hottest take.
This is a hot podcast.
We were talking last week about Patricia getting fired because he wasn't as good as Jim Caldwell. So I'm telling you, don't be surprised when it comes out.
Patriots have a pretty friendly schedule coming up. Dolphins at home, Colts at home, Chiefs at home, at the Bears, that's a layup, at the Bills, that's a layup. And then they get the you want to Sean's giving me the finger there. And look, they're 1-2, but they played the Jaguars, who were good, and they lost to the Lions at home in a primetime game where the Lions were desperate. They haven't played a single team in the AFC East. Like, they've
Can
got
I ask you a serious question?
We can always ask you a serious question.
I'll put this to the crew. It, like, straight up, if you were Matt Nagy, would you rather have Mitch Trubisky playing against Tom Brady or Andrew Luck throwing popcorn passes?
Andrew Luck.
But I mentioned that because they had to bring in Jacoby Brissett to throw bombs at the end of the game.
Okay, well, so we can get to that. I mean, we can just segue right into that. We can agree that nobody's worried about the Patriots. The Patriots will be fine.
Well, they're
ugly
the
loss.
Division.
They're going to win the division. They're going to slaughter Miami at home.
Are we crapping on the Dolphins being 3-0 though?
That's what I was going to say. With Tannehill and Gase have now been together for 16 games that Tannehill has been healthy for, and they're 11-5 in those games. And I know a lot of it has been close wins. The year they made the playoffs, I think they had like a negative point differential. But maybe, like, we should be giving them more credit. I don't think they're going to win the East, but, like, I think they are a potential wild card team.
Wrong.
All right, moving on. Next question.
No, Adam Beasley was on this podcast before in the offseason. He's actually on it twice because Beas is our boy. And he said that people should hammer the Dolphins over. A bunch of sharps in Vegas were on the Dolphins over as well. And it looks like it's going to cruise to the 7 wins because they're already at 3 weeks into the season. Now, have they played anybody, or are they actually good? Maybe not, but Adam Gase has a way of constructing this offense that gets enough yardage with dink and dunks and can turn the ball enough and puts their defense in a good position. I give them credit. They flipped over the locker room. Everybody thought they were left for dead, and the Miami Dolphins are 3-0 and in first place in the division 3 weeks into the season, and they got a chance to be like 3.5 games up with the Patriots.
Yeah, but the problem is the Dolphins are the weirdest team in the NFL. The weirdest 3-0 team, the weirdest everything team. You look at their 3-0, they won like a 24-hour game against the Titans. Can we even count that? They beat the Jets because Sam Darnold threw just multiple turnovers. The Dolphins' offense was horrible in that game. And you look at the Raiders, it's like the Raiders had never practiced stopping a shovel pass. How do you even get 2 shovel pass touchdowns in one game? And that's where Tannehill basically flicked the ball forward 2 feet. And then we had an 18-yard touchdown pass on that, and then I think a 52-yard touchdown pass. And the Dolphins also had some trickeration with Albert Wilson throwing a touchdown. So it was just like the Raiders' defense just looked woefully unprepared for just a not very complicated offense. I am not sold on the Dolphins. I still think they're going to go 6-10. I don't think they're a wild card contender. Sorry, Sean.
I mean, the thing is, there are 3 wins, and in the AFC,
so they're only getting
8
more.
Or 9. I would take that bet. I would take the over on 6.
Breach is just mad that the 3-0 Dolphins are getting more attention than the 2-1 Bengals. That's the problem.
Hey, they play each other in 2 weeks. We'll find out.
We'll
find out.
Dolphins have back-to-back road games at the Patriots and at the Bengals. Then they Bears at home, Lions at home, at the Texans. And then
that's a win. Everyone knows that's a win.
And then the Jets are
the Texans are.
Oh, well, we'll get to the Texans in a second. Yeah. Let's talk about the Colts first, because that Andrew Luck thing is really interesting. And I wrote about that for the Sorting Sunday Pile piece that's on CBSSports.com. At the end of the game, with the Colts having a Hail Mary shot against the Eagles, they subbed out Andrew Luck and put in Jacoby Brissett. And I got a hot take here. I think it was a good idea. Because I think what's my theory on what's happening with Andrew Luck right now. And so, of course, they had Brissett try and chunk the ball 80 yards in the end zone. Didn't feel like Luck could do it. My theory is that Luck is still in the build-up stage from his rehab on his shoulder surgery. We don't know that, but the Colts are bringing him along and believe that they can have him. Like, they haven't announced that, but they think that they can operate Frank Reich's offense with these short passing attempts. Three games, Andrew Luck's only attempted 8 passes more than 20 yards down the field. He's only completed 2 of those passes. Hadn't stretched the field vertically at all. The Colts have played well and been in close games. They could have beaten, should have beaten the Bengals in week 1. They did beat the Redskins in week 2, and they had a shot at beating the Eagles in week 3. So I think they've really upgraded the coaching, but I don't think Luck is back. I think we've got like 60% of Luck in terms of his arm strength, and they're still rehabbing him and getting him ready, and they didn't want to blow out his arm on one silly shot that's a low percentage throw to the end zone.
He's 60%. 60% of Luck that can throw the ball 12 yards is better than Jacoby Brissett.
I don't know. Maybe 70. Maybe.
I appreciate your honesty.
Maybe. I don't know what percentage he is. Like, I think that we all thought coming into week 1, based on the fact that he played all preseason, that he was 90%+ healthy.
Throw any long passes in
preseason. Ryan was comparing him. Who are you comparing him to?
Chad Pennington.
Chad Pennington.
Exactly. Yeah, Ryan's been talking about this since his first preseason.
I mean, you can win with Chad Pennington, but is that the offense that Frank Reich's going to go with going forward? And by the way, every defense knows now, if they didn't already, I'm sure they already did know, that Andrew Luck can't throw the ball more than 12 yards
down
the field.
There's no reason a safety should be further than 10 yards off the line of scrimmage. Against
right,
the
exactly.
Forward,
so,
right?
I mean, that's sort of a hindrance if your offense is in the 20th century and you're using the forward pass. So I don't know where you go from here. And what if, by the way, he's not 60% from where he's going to be, but he's 60% of what he was, and that's it.
So you're saying, if he's 100% of Andrew Luck right now, the Colts are 100% bleeped. I mean, like, that's they're done. Like, they're 100% screwed, because that means that they have Chad Popgun Pennington throwing passes for him, and it's just not going to work out.
You got to trade. If you're Frank Reich, you got to trade Andrew Luck to the 49ers right now before they ask any questions. Just roll Jacoby Brissett.
I have no problem with that.
And you know what's crazy about the Colts today? They had 209 total yards. They never had a number that low all of last season without Luck. Think about that.
Exactly, John.
That's, you know, Brissett can run the offense just as good as Andrew Luck can right now, because at least there's a threat of throwing downfield. I'm not going to go completely hot take, Dolphins 6-10 hot take, and say that Jacoby should go in there and replace Andrew Luck right now. But I think if you get to week 8 or 9, Andrew Luck still can't throw downfield, you got to start taking a serious look and consider Wilson's Chad Pennington theory here, that maybe it's time to give Jacoby a chance.
Out of the top 25 quarterbacks in terms of passing yards, total passing yards on the season, there are only 2 guys below 6 yards per attempt. Andrew Luck is currently 22nd at 5.3 yards per attempt. Yikes. And then Mitchell Trubisky at 25 is at 5.7 yards per attempt. Yikes.
And his arm is fine, by the way.
He's 100%.
No, he's bad.
Is he bad, Sean? Is he bad?
I don't know if he's bad. He's not good right now. He's bad right now. I don't know if that means he's going to be bad the rest of the year.
You can see the future with Patrick Mahomes, but you have no idea what Mitch Trubisky is going to be.
Well, I can see the future with Patrick Mahomes. When did I say that?
About 10 minutes ago.
All right, so should the Bears cut Mitchell Trubisky next
season?
No.
I heard yes.
In all seriousness, the Mitchell Trubisky thing is concerning, because he went on, for the third game in a row. Now, the Bears are 2-1, and they're in first place, and they could be. They should
first
be.
Half of the first game, he looked great.
First half of the first drive of the second game, he looked great.
He's had 3 good drives all year. There was another one in that Seahawks game in the second half that they scored on that he looked good on. But yeah, it's been he's had three good drives in 3 games. Patrick Mahomes had 5 great drives in the first half on Sunday. So it's obviously concerning, but the good news about the Bears is that their defense is playing well enough to win these games, 17-14. They're not going to be able to go to the playoffs, though. If this is what Trubisky is, then they're screwed. I think the hope is that he's in an actual offense for the first time, because I think you can throw what happened last year out the window. And maybe it is he's just picking up a new offense, and he doesn't look confident back there. And maybe it's a confidence thing. I don't know what it is. I'm really surprised about his accuracy. That is what's throwing me off, because I thought for all of his faults last year, he was extremely accurate with ball placement. And it's been the complete opposite, and that's what I'm concerned about, because he's gotten worse than he was a year ago. I'm not ready to say Mitch Trubisky's bad, but I think it's okay to start being concerned.
He's pretty bad.
Well, I mean, the thing with the Mahomes stuff is not fair, because Mahomes spent an entire year learning on the bench under Andy Reid. Trubisky spent an entire year fighting off like with Dontrell Inman as his number one wide receiver, fighting through a John Fox offense designed to make him a worse quarterback than he was when he got there. And then they bring in Matt Nagy, and just like with the Shanahan stuff, like you're not going to pick this up and just start rolling with it immediately. And by the way, Rob Gronkowski confirms he threatened to retire if the Patriots don't try to trade him. That's hilarious.
He does not care.
He does not. He basically, you know, decided. I mean, he had to deal with a year's worth of just setbacks, and so I don't think it's fair to compare Mahomes and Trubisky, especially when you factor in just how deep in season that group of weapons is in Kansas City versus how these guys in Chicago are trying to gel together.
So, but, Brenson, if Ryan Pace, Sean's guy, had drafted Patrick Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes would be doing what now in that same offense with the same shortcomings that Trubisky had to deal with?
Patrick Mahomes would be completing 58% of his passes, and he'd have 6 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, and the Bears would be 1-2.
This is what I think people forget about the Trubisky-Mahomes stuff, is that Trubisky barely played in college, too, and I think
should be a red flag, shouldn't it?
Yeah, 12. Yeah,
well, I think you drafted him with the understanding is that this guy has the potential to become a great quarterback, but he is more of a project than
with the second
Watson.
Overall pick.
Look, Larry,
you can criticize Pace for trading up to draft Trubisky. I did it at the time
over Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. No big deal.
I think it's completely valid to criticize Pace for doing that, but I don't think it's fair to write off Trubisky because he's a guy who didn't start much in college. He had one season. Barely played last year and then has been bad through 3 games.
Let me ask you this, hold on, Ryan, before you go. Is it a red flag that he didn't play in college because they wanted to play Marquise Williams ahead of him? Is that a red flag?
Maybe. I mean, you probably
it is.
Want
it is.
He
it
said
is
maybe.
Yeah. The first game of the season where they played Marquise Holy Williams, God. He threw 3 red zone interceptions against South Carolina in a loss that kept them out of the college football playoff, and they still played him the whole year. It's unbelievable.
Oh,
then again, we've seen football coaches, both in college and professionally, play the wrong quarterback over and over again.
Well, that was actually going to get me to a point that I was going to make next, which is, holy hell, what was Steve Wilkes doing against the Bears? So you're talking about some back-ass coaching. They wait until they're down 16-14, having given away a potential game and an opportunity for me to troll the Bears' official Twitter account back after they trolled me last week because I was the only one to pick the freaking Cardinals to win the game outright. The Cardinals are losing 16-14, and with less than like 3 minutes or 2 minutes left, they sub in Josh Rosen for Sam Bradford. What the hell, Breach, was Steve Wilkes thinking? That is not when you make a change to a rookie quarterback.
No, that was probably one of the 3 worst coaching decisions of the day. It's like, who? It's got to be, he's the head coach, so it's, and I know he's a defensive guy, but in the end, he's got to have final say. So is it like the offense coordinator came up and said, hey, man, how about putting Josh Rosen in here on this key part after the Bears have completely just befuddled and terrorized our starting quarterback, Sam Bradford? Yeah, let's just throw the rookie out there in this key situation when he hasn't taken any warm-up throws in 2.5 hours before the game. So that was just a horrible, horrible decision. And obviously, we saw what happens when you make a horrible decision like that. Josh Rosen looked bad, and I don't know why Steve Wilkes. It was just everything the Cardinals did in the second half blew my mind, but not in a good way.
By the way, I actually love the decision to bring in Rosen with 2 minutes to go.
But I mean, it's like he's like, oh, you know what? He worked for Hugh Jackson on Thursday. I should do that.
I think Steve Wilkes fell asleep for like the first 45 minutes of the game, and he sort of woke up and he was disoriented, and he meant to put in Rosen earlier because Bradford's terrible, but maybe his thinking was something along the lines of, we're probably going to lose this game because we're a terrible football team. Let's put in Rosen and see how he responds to the pressure. Before he came in, I think the first 4 drives of the second half had ended in turnovers for the Cardinals, so it couldn't have gotten worse. And then I think
– Ryan, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that Steve Wilkes looks a little like Gus Fring?
If Gus went a little heavy on the Pollo y Loco, what is the name of that place?
Yeah, Los Pollos Hermanos.
Hermanos, yeah, because he was like pretty thin rail at the beginning of the thing, but if he just sort of sat in the booth and chowed down on some chicken for a while, maybe. But I think that Gus would be a little more calculating in terms of how he uses quarterback because there are questions to be asked. But I understand why you start Bradford to begin the year because Bradford has shown the ability not to not be terrible. but he has not looked great. And I think much more so than Tyrod. Tyrod should have never been a starter. But I understand why you stick with Bradford. But at some point, you're like, okay, what's the downside to going with a rookie? And he just decided with 2 minutes to go in a super tight game that, hey, we'll see what happens.
It's the weirdest timing in the world. And, you know, look, continuing a theme that we have seen all season, Mike McCoy, who was once upon a time thought to be a good offensive coordinator, managed to get David Johnson a total of 16 touches in this game. He caught 4 passes for 30 yards and a score, but he ran the ball 12 times for 31 yards. And look, I get that the Bears' defense is good and they're stopping the run, but you got to get the ball in David Johnson's hand in short yardage situations and let him do what he does, which is evade tackles and bust through dudes and rip off long runs. I mean, there's no reason for the Cardinals to lose this game. They gagged it. I didn't think the Bears played particularly well and didn't deserve to win, but kudos to Chicago for going on the road and getting a win and getting to 2-1. Cardinals.
Hey, Brent, can I ask you something real quick?
You can always ask me something, right?
2012, Pete Prisco would crush.
I
know, yeah. 2012, Pete Prisco would crush your boy Russell Wilson because he would refuse to stay in the pocket.
Yep.
And every time I watch Trubisky, and I'm not just taking a shot at Sean at this point, he refuses to stay in the pocket. So taking the long view, is there any chance that Trubisky approaches being the type of quarterback that Russell is in terms of using his athleticism, but also finding a way to stay in the pocket for more than half a second?
Here's the thing with Trubisky that I worry about is that he spent in this Larry Fedora offense at Carolina. I mean, he didn't play under center from like sixth grade until last year. Like I'm not even kidding. Like he played out of shotgun exclusively through like high school and college. And so he's also been in these up-tempo offenses where he's used to getting it out quick. And I get that you kind of do that in the Matt Nagy system, but like you have to be able to, like, you just have to worry about him being able to make reads. And I think the learning curve for him in that respect is going to be much longer.
I think the problem has been if his first read is there, he'll take it. But the second his first read is gone, his eyes just drop. And what you're saying, Ryan, is completely right. His eyes drop and he looks to scramble and he runs into pressure when pressure isn't even there. So the problem for him is getting off his first read. If you take that away, he's going to struggle. I feel like because we have been bashing the Bears offense, I just want to point out the Bears went down 14-0 in this game. After that, the Arizona drive chart looks like this. Punt, punt, punt. Interception, interception, fumble recovery, interception, end of game.
Yeah. Mike
they beat a
sucks.
Team whose coach fell asleep.
Yeah. And look, Steve Wilks is a good human being, but I don't know if he's a good coach. He is. He's
well rested, too.
Sean, if you could do over the 2017 draft, would you take Trubisky or the last pick in the whole entire draft, Chad Kelly?
I would take Trubisky. That,
Chad Kelly's Breach cheaper.
Breach is coming in hot here.
They're both backup quarterbacks.
And for the record,
Would you trade Mitchell Trubisky for Derek Carr?
In his contract, no.
What about no? What about just straight up no contract needed?
Why are you hesitating?
Wow,
I've been like anti Derek Carr since like 2015.
Oh, you live in Oakland, man. You better lock your doors tonight.
Would you trade Mitchell Trubisky for Ryan Tannehill? Same deal in the contract, doesn't count.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think Tannehill's better than
Ryan's face.
Tannehill under Gase has been pretty good.
Sean, I'm going to need you to pee in a cup right now. We have to be able to see it because you're clearly on drugs.
For the record, would you trade
Mitchell Trubisky for Josh Allen?
No.
You would for Tannehill, but not Josh Allen? What about Kirk Cousins?
Andy Dalton. Yes.
Andy Dalton?
At this age, no.
What age? He's 30.
Would you trade?
I don't want a 30-year-old Andy Dalton. He's peaked. With Trubisky, there's a chance for upside.
No, there's not. I'm sad to tell you, there's not. This is
you're giving up after
yes
3 games.
Throwing my hands up, moonwalking out of the room.
Would you trade Trubisky for Blake Bortles? Oh my God! Did you just hesitate? No.
Okay.
Oh my God, this is the saddest thing we've
ever
done.
Do you trade Trubisky for Blake Bortles?
No, of course not.
Sean is the Ryan Grixon of podcasts.
This is sadder than the beatdown the Minnesota Vikings got on Sunday at the hands of the Buffalo Bills. And by the way, if you like highlights, like real sports talk for people who like sports, just the action, not the drive. Are you taking your headphones out for this read? CBS Sports HQ was on top of every highlight from Sunday as soon as the games happened. We are busting out halftime shows. We are busting out post-game shows, pre-game shows. There's a Sportsline show from 12 to 1 on Sundays where Nick Costos hosts and gives a bunch of picks along with various Vegas experts to help you win cash money. He went 4-1 in the Super Contest this week. So did I, by the way. And if you go to CBSSports.com/live, you can watch CBS Sports HQ yourself. You will catch such experts as Ryan Wilson, John Breach, Sean Wagner-McGuff, and myself. CBS Sports HQ is an all-new 24/7 streaming network featuring breaking news, highlights, and expert analysis from all major sports. Stream CBS Sports HQ any time of the day on your phone, computer, or connected TV, including Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, or Fire TV. It is real sports for real fans. So the Buffalo Bills and Sean's boy, Josh Allen, waxed the Minnesota Vikings. Ryan, do you think that the Vikings, who, by the way, I think Everson Griffin was out, they sat Dalvin Cook with a hamstring injury. Do you think the Vikings benched people on purpose, knowing they have the Rams next Thursday? Or this Thursday, I guess.
Maybe. I mean, they very well could have. I mean, there was no reason to expect the Bills to show up. They didn't even, they thought they were going to Wisconsin for starters.
That was the best story of the week.
That's what the Bills social media person tweeted out before they got fired. But they ended up in Minnesota. They showed up and they, I mean, it was a beatdown from the start. I think it was 27-0 right before they scored 6 points at the end there. Yes. Cousins threw the ball 55 times. No one saw this coming, including Sean McDermott and the Buffalo Bills. I think it's sort of a good thing for Josh Allen, obviously. He was 15-22 for 196 and a touchdown. He's been sort of shaky in his previous outings, but that's understandable. There's no offensive line to speak of. There's no one to throw the ball to. LeSean McCoy didn't play today, so Chris Ivory did most of the running, got 56 yards. So there's something to build on. I still think the Bills are a terrible football team, but they're not going to go 0-16. I think next in line for that eventuality might be the Raiders, to be honest with you. But, big win for the Bills. I don't know if it means anything in the long run for the Vikings, just because we've seen good teams play terribly. We were just talking about the Patriots. I don't think anyone's concerned about them either. I think the defense that Minnesota has is one of the best. Kirk Cousins is pretty good. I mean, he's still 300 yards, had a touchdown interception, so it's not like he just went off the rails. I just think it's one of those any given Sunday sort of cliches. It just so happens that the Vikings lost at home to the Josh Allen's Bills.
I'm going to jump in real quick because you watch that game and it's amazing. It's amazing what happens. It's not like the Vikings defense even played bad. Kirk Cousins fumbled twice. The Bills, two of their first three scores, the Bills drove like 25 yards to get 10 points. So you really can't even put that on the Vikings defense. And it really just felt like Kirk Cousins wasn't earning his paycheck, which is not easy to do when you have an $84 million guaranteed contract. But you can even take this back to last week's game against the Packers. We talked all week about that Clay Matthews hit, right? Now, say they don't throw the flag there and the game ends with Cousins throwing interception. His numbers are horrible last week. All of a sudden, it's like 250 yards, two interceptions. So that completely changed the storyline on Cousins. And then imagine that coming into this week where he fumbles twice, throws an interception, and just looks atrocious, then we're saying, hey, Kirk Cousins has the richest contract in the NFL for guaranteed money, and he's looked horrible 2 out of 3 weeks, and there would be a lot of questions right now. So I do not trust Kirk Cousins right now, and I think he's going to get mauled by the Rams defense on Thursday.
Are you worried about the Vikings, though, in that division?
I mean,
you know who's in first place, right?
By the way, I was trying to bring it up. It's the first sign since week 3 of 2014 that the Bears have a winning record, which is horrible.
Oh, it's the first time since when?
Since week 3 of 2014 that the Bears have a winning record. And it's the first time since week 16 of 2013 that they have a lead in the division.
And I think the Bears are definitely in it because you look at the Vikings, I think their offense is their weak link right now.
Their offensive line is not good.
It's not, and Kirk Cousins is not good behind an offensive line that's not good. The Packers have a gimpy Aaron Rodgers. Who knows what's going on in Detroit, because I don't think anyone has them figured out. So I honestly, 2 weeks ago, I would have written off the Bears and the Lions. But now, tonight, I think that division is absolutely wide open. And no, I don't want the Bears to win it, because then that's all Sean will talk about for the next 12 months. But they're in it.
They, by the way, look at the Vikings schedule coming up. They get the Rams on Thursday, which, and they're seven point underdogs in LA on Thursday. That's crazy that the Vikings would ever be 7 point underdogs to anybody if you told somebody before the season started. Then they're at the Eagles the Sunday after that. So 10 days, but it's two back to back road games. Get the Cardinals at home. They'll be a 16 point favorite in that game. Then they're at the Jets. And then they get the Saints at home, and then the Lions at home on 11-4. I mean, that's three or four of those are very losable, especially those on the road. And I wouldn't be surprised at all. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Vikings lost their next two games, right? Like, that's not insane if they went to the LA and lost to the Rams and lost to the Eagles. And then all of a sudden, I mean, you know, where then if that happens and the Packers stumble at all, by the way, we'll get to the Packers in a second, but I mean, the Bears could put a stranglehold in this division kind of early heading into midseason.
Sounds like you're buying into my Lions theory.
I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't know if we're living in a world where Mitchell Trubisky's winning a division title.
We're not.
Not when Sean's trying to trade him for every quarterback in the NFL.
Just Ryan Tannehill.
The Ryan Tannehill thing is sad. He's like 34, man. He's like
34. The Bears' schedule is kind of interesting because they get the Bucs, and who knows what you're going to get with Fitzpatrick. I like, it's at home. I would pick the Bears to win that game. Maybe I'm crazy because the Bucs have actually looked pretty good. We'll see what happens after they beat the Steelers on Monday night. And then they get the Dolphins. And, like, I think they could win both those games, but I think they could also lose both those games. The Bears,
before the Khalil Mack trade, the Bears over 6.5. They're going to get that by Thanksgiving. Like, they get the Buccaneers at home, then a bye, then the Dolphins on the road, which is a game they should win. I can see them losing that. That's fine. Then they get the Patriots at home. They'll lose that game. Then the Jets at home. They should win that. Bills on the road. They should win that. And Lions at home. They should win that. I mean, they could easily beat.
They should beat the Lions at home?
I think so. It's weird. I feel like you are higher on the Bears than I am. I look at all those games, and I think they're all winnable. But when you have a quarterback who's that limited, all those games are also losable. You know what I mean?
When I say they should win, I mean that they'll be favored. Like, I think they'll be favored in those games. Of course, they could lose them.
I mean, the Bills are playing a lot of games like they played on Sunday.
The Vikings just lost.
They're just playing well, and it's a close game, and a couple bounces is going to decide it.
Yeah, that's football. That's what professional football is.
No, professional football is having Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins.
No, it's
and
not.
Being able to move the ball. No, that's not professional football.
No, because
who's won the last few Super Bowls? Who goes to the playoffs?
Right.
Nick
Foles won. Yeah, that's right. Good point, Breach. And I don't know if you know this, but like Tom Brady is – there's not a lot of Tom Brady's and not a lot of Aaron Rodgers. Like sometimes you have a mediocre quarterback on your team and you need crap to break your way so you can win football games.
Are they pretty much like a worse version of last year's Jaguars where you don't know what you're getting out of the quarterback, but they have a defense that will keep them
You know what's really funny is that when the Khalil Mack trade happened, R.J. White, our editor, made that point. He said, I think he wrote it down somewhere on CBSSports.com, but he's like, is it possible the Bears are like a homeless man's Jaguars with a slightly worse quarterback and better receivers and a worse defense? Sure, it's entirely possible.
You have Allen Robinson.
Right, Allen Robinson's like a poor man's Keelan Cole or something
In Blake Bortles' defense, he balled out against the Patriots in the championship game. That's not why he's not the reason they lost that game. He didn't play great against the Bills in the first round. He played okay against the Steelers. I don't know if Trubisky can stand up against the Patriots and play the way that Bortles did.
He can in the first series. He'll win the first series. By the way, speaking of the Jaguars, we're not going to spend long on this because I didn't watch this. I didn't watch a second of this game. I'm not going to lie to you. I saw the score. I wasn't going. Did you watch it, Sean?
So the NFL
The Titans won 9-6 over the Jaguars in a game that nobody wants to see.
What I was going to say is that the NFL actually puts out these highlight videos from every game, and they're actually like 15 minutes long. It's a great way to just catch up on a game if you didn't watch it. And every game was like 15 minutes long, and then I clicked on the Titans-Jags, and it was like 6 minutes. And that's how you know nothing happened. It was like a bunch of field goals, a couple Marcus Mariota scrambles, and that was it.
I mean, it's literally impossible to watch every single game of the weekend, but you can see where this went sideways on the Jaguars, right? So like, Blake Bortles threw 34 times, and they attempted 19 rushes, 5 of those from Bortles. Like, I get that it worked against the Patriots, but it's not going to work every single time. I wonder if maybe the Titans' defense is better than we've been giving it credit for, and if Marcus Mariota can get healthy, if this Titans team, which, by the way, first place in the AFC South, tied with the Jaguars, but they have the head-to-head tiebreaker, might actually be a better team than we're giving them credit for. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I'll jump in here because I watched like half that game.
Good
being
for
the,
you.
Being the guy in Nashville, it's on TV. It's easy to watch for me. So I've somehow been watching the Titans the past 3 weeks, which was rough that first week with the 7-hour marathon. But what I'm going to say about them is if I had to hand out a Coach of the Year award after 3 weeks, I'm giving it to Mike Vrabel. I mean, what that guy has done has been amazing. And when you consider that the last 2 weeks, the Titans were starting Blaine Gabbert. Like, imagine thinking you're going to go into Jacksonville and win a game with Blaine Gabbert as your starting quarterback. No one would ever think that. Your starting quarterback, Marcus Mariota, his elbow hurts so badly he can't even grip a football. They have to play him anyway, and they still win. And basically all they were doing was what Sean just mentioned with the Mariota scrambles was the Jaguars just couldn't figure it out. It was just like, I don't know what it is about the Titans. They've now won 3-0 or 3 in a row over Jacksonville, but Jacksonville's defense looks like the 2015 Browns defense when they play against the Titans. And so this whole thing was inexplicable. The Jaguars' offense looked horrible. Man, it was just a brutal game, and I'm actually glad I didn't watch all four quarters.
I think, by the way, you were saying Jaguars right that time, so good job there. I'm a little bit confused about what the Titans are doing, though. And I know Breach was just saying he would give Vrabel Coach of the Year. I don't understand the rationale that Mariota is healthy enough to be active. But is the argument Blaine Gabbert at 100% is better than Mariota at 75%? Because I don't think that's the case.
The funny part is that it almost feels like Andrew Luck's situation where they're saying, okay, he's healthy, but we don't really want him to play. Whereas the Colts are going with Luck, even though he's not 100%. The Titans are saying he's good enough to play, but you know, we don't want him starting. We don't want him to get more injured.
Make him inactive? Like, if Mariota is actually at an injury risk, I feel like you would just make him inactive. Like, you're not risking that. So it's just weird to me that they're playing Gabbert over Mariota when Mariota's healthy enough to play.
Sean, Blaine Gabbert is 2-0 in the past 2 weeks.
He threw 3 passes today.
I heard this on a podcast, and I don't remember. I'm going to guess it was around the NFL.com guys. I just don't remember who said it, otherwise I would credit for him. But it was like, only in football – with somebody, like, there's an injury, it's like, Marcus Mariota can't feel his fingers. And it's like, we don't know. Like, it's not even like, we don't know if he's going to live. It's like, we don't know if he can play football today. He's like, he still doesn't have feeling in his hands. It's like, well, I guess he's going to have to just soldier through and play.
Do you
play
remember when Peyton Manning, it came out, he couldn't feel, like, anything in his fingertips. And it was, like, after his record-breaking year.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, like, if I couldn't feel anything in my fingertips, I'd be freaking out. I'd be calling 911. I'd be like, I can't feel my fingertips, man. Like, sir, please stop taking.
How would you
drugs.
Dial the phone?
I mean, he's not blind, Wilson.
Yeah, I can jam the finger. I don't have to feel it.
Siri, I can't feel my fingers. Dial 911.
Siri, call 911. Okay, I don't want to talk about Tennessee and Jacksonville anymore. Let's talk about Green Bay and Washington, because I called this one of my super contest picks. Again, I don't know if you noticed, I went 4-1 this week. Did I mention that yet? Washington.
4 times already.
I'll be mentioning it again. I mentioned it when I went 0-5 last week. Big bounce back for yours truly. Adrian Peterson. I didn't even think about this before the game. I thought about it as soon as the game started, and I was mad that I hadn't brought it up. Of course he's going to plow through the Packers. He hates the Packers. He was a Vikings player for so long that he's angry, and he came out and he ran angry. He looked great, 19 attempts, 120 yards, 2 touchdowns. Alex Smith, 12 for 20, 220, 2 touchdowns and a pick. Had a couple shots at Josh Doctson. 3 targets, 2 of them in the red zone, but couldn't complete them. Did throw a touchdown pass to Paul Richardson that was nice, and to Jameson Crowder. Thought the Redskins' defense was very impressive in getting after Aaron Rodgers. Watched this one pretty closely because, as you know, I've got the Redskins, of course, winning the NFC East. And I think it's a viable possibility if the guys in the trenches stay healthy and they don't lose too many guys to injury that the Redskins could win that division.
Yeah, and I think last week, well, they beat Arizona, they killed them in week 1, and then they come out and they lose to the Colts, and that's when everyone was like, I don't know what to make of the Redskins, maybe they're actually bad. But then the Colts today actually come out and look pretty good against the Eagles, so maybe that loss to the Colts isn't that bad. I don't know what to make of the Redskins, I really don't. I don't think they're going to win the division. But they were impressive today, and I think week two's loss of the Colts now doesn't look nearly as bad as it did at the time.
The thing is, the division's it's not good, John. It's not good.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about the Redskins is that if you ever seen that Rudolph they show every Christmas, there's the Island of Misfit Toys, and that's how I feel about with the Redskins. Like, you have Adrian Peterson, you have Alex Smith, you have all these players that no one wants. They're on the same team. And the thing that the Redskins did today that I loved, and I saw most of the first half and spotty on the second half, but was that, and this is, we've been talking about how Andrew Luck can't throw downfield and how that affects a team. In this game, Redskins' first drive, Alex Smith goes 3 for 3 for 73 yards. He's taken downfield shots. And then after that, the Packers were kind of looking for that. And then that opened up all this room for Adrian Peterson to run for 120 yards. So that's what happens when you have a quarterback who can actually throw downfield. And it's like, where was this when Alex Smith was in Kansas City? But still, so watching the Redskins just kind of get comfortable with each other, like, I think this team is only going to get better. And I love your pick of them winning division, Brenton. I don't love a lot of your picks, but I do love that one.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Eagles are probably still the favorite, Ryan, but you had some Alex Smith for MVP love before the season.
Yeah, I was making that conversation before Darius Geis got hurt. I had no faith in Adrian Peterson because he's 33, but so far he's proven me wrong. Also worth noting, we have no idea what's going on with Aaron Rodgers' knee. That team is actually minus 13 in point differential, which is sort of mind-blowing, given that they tied a game they probably should have won. And then they lost to the Redskins, which is sort of inexplicable given the conversation we had about the Colts last week. But, so we got to figure out what's going on with Aaron Rodgers' knee, because if he's not healthy, then it's the Sean Kizer show, and I don't think anyone wants to see that in Green Bay. I don't even think the Packers have said exactly what the situation is with his knee. I think the Redskins can win the division, by the way. The Eagles didn't look great today. We saw Carson Wentz for the first time. He was rusty, which is fine. My team that I picked to win the division, the Giants, finally won a game. And if they play the Texans for the rest of the year, they'll probably go undefeated. So that's something to keep an eye on.
The surprising thing about that game, and I agree with you 100%, like the Rodgers thing is concerning. But just for the sake of time, we can move ahead to that Giants and Texans game. We're going to try and hit every single game. If you want to hit every single game, by the way, go to NFL.com/pick6. It's SIX, PICK SIX. And get yourself a free 7-day trial of NFL Game Pass. It's the only way to watch every single game. You can watch the broadcast version, condensed version. During the primetime game on Sunday night when the Patriots are getting blown out, you don't want to watch that. You can go back and watch that thriller between Mitchell Trubisky and Sam Bradford on your own time, but you really can. It's great. You get all 22. Comes out on Tuesday. Sean likes to grind tape like nobody else in this business. He knows all about that all 22 life, and you should too. Get yourself a free 7-day trial of NFL Game Pass at NFL.com/pick6. On that Texans Giants game, I actually watched kind of a lot of that. I thought JJ Watt is starting to look really good. Like, he's starting to shape into old JJ Watt, but it didn't matter because the Giants were able to do enough on offense. I don't know if I was surprised, because it did feel like a game where both teams should have been desperate, but the Giants felt more desperate than the Texans, Ryan.
J.J. Watt had 3-plus sacks in a game for the sixth time in his career, first time since Week 17, 2015. So, yeah, you're exactly right. J.J. Watt appears to be back. He was dominating fools. Eric Flowers got benched, by the way, going into that game. His move from left tackle to right tackle, now he's been moved off the field altogether, which actually worked out pretty well for Eli Manning, who finally looked like himself. Saquon Barkley flashed a little bit. ODB did his thing. But I do wonder, I don't know what Bill O'Brien, the head coach, is doing. Deshaun Watson looked a little better. He'd looked rusty in the first few weeks. He's coming back off that ACL we know about. But I do wonder if, now that Matt Patricia's off my hot seat, if Bill O'Brien is the sort of next guy with his name underlined in red marker, because he's doing a terrible job with what should be a really good team. Now, Davenport, their left tackle, was called for 4 penalties today, I think, 2 last week. And John McClain, the beat writer for Houston Chronicle, I thought was going to have a heart attack on Twitter today talking about it.
He said, "I might retire at halftime. The Texans are so bad."
So, I mean, they tried to fix the offensive line in the offseason. Clearly, it's not working. So they have huge issues there. And that's sort of, if you don't have an offensive line, you're going to be a terrible offensive football team. So that's where they're at. Lamar Miller had a tough game. So they got to fix that. They're not going to magically fix it in the middle of the season. So I do wonder if some of the heat's going to fall on Bill O'Brien, and how long he's going to last if they continue to play like the worst team in football.
They, in their last 13 games, I think, are 1-12.
What?
Is that good?
They've got the longest losing streak in the NFL right now. They've lost 9 in a row.
Wow.
I mean, it's not even fun to watch the Texans. And what Ryan was saying is, or one of you two just said about how desperate they look. The Texans looked at like they were out there just frolicking on the field, kind of lollygagging around. They looked completely lost in the first half. And the fact that Eli Manning, I think there was definitely some talk that he might be washed up the past few weeks. And, you know, Pat Shurmur the whole offseason was like, hey, I want Eli to complete 70% of his passes when Eli's never even come anywhere close to that number. And then, boom, this game is like Pat Shurmur's fantasy game. I don't even know how this happened. Eli completed, what, like 86, 85% of his passes? So who knows if that's because the Texans are so bad or because the Giants actually figured out how to run this offense.
Yeah, I'm worried. I mean, the Texans, look, they've got a healthy schedule at least to get the Colts on the road. It's not, I'll be interested to see what that line is. I haven't looked at it yet. The Cowboys at home and then the Bills at home. So they need to win these next three. They can get back to 3-3, but if you drop two of those, you're kissing that season goodbye. Like, it's over.
They're not going
to
win those games. They don't have an offensive line.
The offensive line is terrible. I'm not sure that those three teams have the defensive line to mess them up, but look, the Texans might just be a bad football team. A team that is not bad, the New Orleans Saints. Another one of my super contest picks. Did I mention I went 4-1 this week? The Saints won 43-37 in overtime, beating the Dirty Birds of Atlanta in Atlanta in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Good game for Matt Ryan. Great game, actually. 26-35, 374 yards and 5 touchdowns. But he was bested by Drew Brees, who went 39-49 for 396 yards and 3 touchdowns. Did you guys know, do you know what the percentage of passes that Michael Thomas has caught this season? If you know the answer, do you know the answer? Do you mind know the answer? What? All right, guess. I'll give you each a guess. What do you think the percentage of passes that Michael Thomas has caught this season?
69. Percentage thrown to him or percentage of the offense?
Percentage of targets that he has captured with his hands.
85%.
Sean?
I already said 69.
40.
You're a child, Sean. 98.
That's not true.
Yes, holy crap. It is.
He's caught 98% of his passes. First player in NFL history to start the season with 10-plus receptions in three games, in his first three games, and he has 38 catches over his first three games. He is one of the top two or three wide receivers in the league, and we're not talking about him enough. Alvin Kamara also peppered with targets, 20 of them, 15 catches, 124 yards. This is the formula for beating the Falcons. The Panthers showed it last week. They used Christian McCaffrey because if you get these fast guys in space on the inside, there's no Deion Jones, there's no Keanu Neal. The Saints defense didn't look very good. They got the pass rush going a little bit. Marcus Davenport bullied Alex Mack, the center for the Falcons. And neither team really tried to run the ball. This is just a shootout in Atlanta and a fun game to watch, Ryan.
Yeah, you mentioned Deion Jones. They're also without Keanu Neal. Tack McKinley didn't play. And obviously Devontae Freeman's on the other side of the ball, isn't playing either. Yeah, so the Falcons are 1-2. And I'm a little concerned about them, not because they're necessarily playing terrible football. They're playing, you know, replacement level, slightly better football. But they're in the division with the red-hot Buccaneers and the Saints, obviously, you just mentioned. And the Panthers are actually playing really well, too. They beat Breach's Bengals today in a pretty close game. So the Falcons got to sort some things out. I will say, the good news is that Matt Ryan put up some pretty big numbers. We were sort of crapping on him early in the year because of the red zone issues. Three touchdowns to Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, Ridley looked awesome. He was,
and I think Julio had 90 something yards, and he was like the second fiddle. So that's a good sign. But they have some things to clean up, obviously. And look, going into New Orleans. Wait, another game was Atlanta, right?
It was Atlanta. Yeah.
Yeah, losing to that high-powered Saints offense isn't the worst thing in the world. But when you're 1-2 and in last place in that division, you got to sort some things out. So hopefully, fingers crossed, I know you guys are doing the same, Tampa Bay loses on Monday night to keep the Falcons in the mix, because that's their best hope heading into week 4.
What do you think about that Bengals game, Breach? It wasn't that close. Ryan's lying. Wasn't that close?
You know, it wasn't not close, Brinson. I mean, here's the thing.
If not for the 4 interceptions.
They lost by 10 points, and Andy Dalton threw four picks.
With that offense, they lose Joe Mixon. A.J. Green got banged up for a second in there. And,
A.J. Green was out the whole basically second half, I think, with a groin injury.
Right. And that's when the offense became completely dysfunctional. It's like, when I watch it, at least two of those Andy Dalton interceptions, I wasn't sure if it was John Ross's fault for running a bad route, which is completely possible because I am pretty sure he only knows about 10% of the playbook. And then you have Dalton, who has been known to just wing balls up and hope someone catches it. That's how A.J. Green gets 50% of his catches. John Ross is not A.J. Green. He can't make those plays. So the offense just looked a little lost. And I know you think that the score is not indicative of the game, but the game was 28-21. The Bengals were trying to field goal. It would have been 28-24 with late in the fourth quarter. So a little closer than I think your – giving it credit, but Christian McCaffrey did absolutely take over that game. The Bengals couldn't stop him, but they get Vontaze Burfict back next week, so their defense will improve.
I'm not worried about the Bengals. I think they're a good team. They're very complete. They need to get Joe Mixon back. They need to not rush Joe Mixon back.
And they're in a terrible division.
Yeah, they're a terrible division. Christian McCaffrey had 184 rushing yards. I knew he'd cross over 100 because everybody made a big deal out of it. He only caught two passes for 10 yards. And I mean, he just ran the ball really well. I think this Panthers offense is starting to click a little bit. They're going to get Thomas Davis back soon. I think Carolina and Cincinnati are actually kind of similar. Like, they've got a up and down quarterback. They got nice weapons. They're prone to losing a game they have no business losing and winning games they have no business winning. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that trajectory continue throughout the course of the season. Did we talk about how the Raiders stink? Did we mention the Raiders stinking? You want to talk about that, Ryan, or Sean?
They're going 0-16. I said it before the season, their best chance to win, maybe the Browns, and the Browns now have Baker Mayfield, and they're not beating the Browns. Baker Mayfield's going to come to Oakland and drop 40 on that team. And I know, look, I think the offense actually is doing pretty well with John Gruden, at least for like the first half or in spurts, but they don't have any answers on defense. And, you know, we saw the report before the games on Sunday that Gruden has his own crew of personnel guys with their own draft boards and their own personnel grades on these guys. How is that making that team better? But by the way, he gets along great with Reggie McKenzie. So they get that.
I love that. They're like, no, everybody's fine with those two. It's like, no, they're not.
Reggie's a big cuddly teddy bear. Everyone loves him as they walk down the hallway high-fiving each other. But the defense is terrible. The offense hasn't played a complete game yet. I know Sean hates Derek Carr, but I think Derek Carr can be a pretty good quarterback. He was in the MVP conversation before he broke his leg 2 years ago. But John Gruden's out of his element, and he can make all the dumb faces on the sidelines he wants. It ain't, 1998, 2002, whatever. And I just don't see the Raiders being anything other than a terrible football team.
Raiders have now covered the first half line in all three games. They're a pick'em against Cleveland at home. I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being Cleveland favored on the road.
Is there a bigger slap in the face than opening as not favored over a team that's coming off a year and a half losing streak in your house?
With a rookie quarterback.
With a rookie quarterback.
635 days.
Hugh Jackson on a Sunday. There's no bigger slap in the face. I just can't get over. The Raiders have, I think somebody pointed out in our Slack room today, but the Raiders have the worst point difference. Maybe it was you, Breach, was the point differential the second half?
Yeah, it was. Well, going into week three, they've been outscored by 36 points in the second half. That's now up to 47. But just to put it in perspective, the Raiders through 2 weeks have been outscored by 36 points in the second half. No other team in the NFL had even been outscored by 25 points in the second half. So the Raiders are just getting bombed on in the second half. And that happened again in this game. They're ahead 10-7. They get outscored 21-10 in the second half. So like 1 week, you're like, it's 1 week. Who cares? 2 weeks, you're like, maybe this is a problem. 3 weeks, I mean, this feels like a trend where John Gruden's only coaching half the game. And then he just gives up and, drinking out of I don't know what he's doing. He's just not coaching.
By the way, one of the maniacs he has working in his private lair, he's a guy, a scout, who said that Jake Locker should be the number one pick. So that's what we're working with.
So Gruden's plan is, his master plan is to talk Jake Locker out of retirement? Is that?
You never know. I think that's the takeaway. Maybe to be a pass rusher. Who knows?
Yeah, so the Raiders need to get stuff figured out for the second half. Otherwise, Ryan's prediction is going to be right. They're going to go 0-16, and Gruden's not going to get fired because Mark Davis can't afford to write him a check for $90 million to pay off the rest of that contract.
By the way, how do we still have three games left? This is taking forever. It's fine. So it's Sean's fault. Sean wouldn't stop talking about the Bears or Jimmy Garoppolo. Way to go, Sean. Just for that, you can tell us all about this Denver-Baltimore game that Baltimore won handily. So did I mention that I had Baltimore as a super contest pick?
I feel like you should talk about the Ravens since they're your darling team.
I love the Ravens. Two and one now for the Ravens if they stumbled against those pathetic Bengals 2 weeks ago or last week. And now the Baltimore Ravens. Alex Collins finally getting it going. 18 carries, 68 yards and a touchdown. They limited Case Keenum to 192 yards and a pick. I think Royce Freeman scored a touchdown. And this game was a little close. Emmanuel Sanders had one carry for a 35-yard touchdown. But John Brown continued piling up yards, 5 catches, 9 targets, 86 yards. Michael Crabtree, also a nice weapon. Joe Flacco, pretty good game, 25 of 40 for 277 and a touchdown. And then the defense played really well. I mean, I think that this Ravens team is really dangerous at home, and they're going to cough up a few maybe a few games on the road, but I think Baltimore is going to be involved in this AFC playoff race, whether it's in that division or whether it's in the, as a wild card for a while. Huge game coming up Sunday night against the 0-2-1 Steelers. Is that right, Ryan?
Oh, I'm not looking ahead past Monday. They meet on Sunday night too. Next Sunday night.
So Steelers are looking ahead on a primetime game to the Ravens.
Oh, they could be. Oh, 3-1 by a week from now?
I don't even want to. That could be something. I've been trolling you about other work-related things, so I don't want to troll you about the Steelers.
Neither is true. I don't know why Joe Flacco's throwing the ball 40 times a game. I don't know. He threw it.
Ravens have 3 games in a row on the road coming up, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, they do play well at home. We saw what happens when they travel. They don't. Historically, they play terribly in Cincinnati, so maybe that's a one-off, but I'm not sold on this team by any stretch. Crabtree had 7 catches. I will say that the guys they got in the offseason, John Brown, Mike Crabtree, and Willie Snead, are all contributing, which is something they never got from Breshad Perriman and sort of the scrubs they drafted who didn't pan out. So that's a good thing. But I don't know why Marty Morningwick is leaning so much on the pass game. You have Alex Collins. You have Buck Allen, who is basically in there just caring for 1 yard touchdown runs, and he's doing it quite well. But, I don't know how far the team can go when Joe Flacco was the centerpiece of your offense. Historically, it has not worked out well for them. Maybe this year's different. I doubt it. But, when they hit the road, we'll see.
Ravens have been to the red zone 12 times this season. How many touchdowns do you think they've scored?
Buck Allen has a lot. I would say that Joe Flacco has 2 and Buck Allen has like 3. 5.
The Ravens have scored 12 touchdowns in 12 attempts. NFL record for most red zone trips to start the season with touchdowns. This team has been unstoppable inside the 20-yard line, and the scoreboard today should have been even worse because one of the Broncos' touchdowns came after a blocked punt, and then they scored in like a 4-yard drive following that. So, everything Brinson just said, this, I don't know what's up with this offense. I don't know why it's good, but
it's unsustainable.
What RJ, our editor, pointed out in Slack is that the Ravens actually have the best point differential in the AFC. A lot of that is due to going to Buffalo and beating up on the Bills. But I think what's important is that they're also 2-1 without Jimmy Smith, and they're going to get him back after week 4. And I thought going into the season when you had Jimmy Smith get suspended, I thought that could have been a brutal blow. Even if they go 2-2 without Jimmy Smith, just getting a player of that caliber back after 4 weeks, I think it's going to be huge for them. So I made fun of Brinson at the beginning of the year for like picking the Ravens and picking the Steelers in third, but I think they have as good of a chance as the Steelers or the Bengals.
Oh, settle down. It's early. Good Lord.
Yeah, fourth.
Jimmy Smith. Fourth. By the way, Jimmy Smith is the Mitch Trubisky of cornerbacks.
Wait, you picked the Steelers to finish in fourth?
No, I'm saying I wish I had because I think it looks like the Steelers are going to finish in fourth.
They're going to be 0-3-1 in a week. We've already established
that. I mean, look, it's not a great division, but the Steelers might be terrible and the Ravens and Bengals might be decent. The Browns might be better than we think. The Steelers could finish in last.
They might trade Le'Veon Bell.
If the Steelers finish in last place in the AFC North, do they fire Mike Tomlin?
Well, no, they're not going to do that. I mean, here's the thing. I think there are questions to be asked about what Tomlin's doing in the locker room. But then you say that, and then you see sort of the Patriots no-show tonight. And, no one's having that conversation about Belichick. And then you see the Jaguars no-show. And, you may say that about Doug Marrone, but he's not going anywhere, obviously. So I think you can sort of point fingers around the league. And fans are frustrated. I get that. But I don't know who's plan B.
Right. No, well, I'm trolling you after I said I wouldn't troll you. That's all.
But I do think the difference is the Patriots, like their star player is not just skipping the first 3 weeks of the season. And, Gronk's not picking fights with media members like Antonio Brown. So there's definitely a little more drama going on. And they're going to trade Le'Veon Bell, aren't they, Wilson?
Well, you know they're not going to trade him. But I think what's interesting about the Gronk thing is that so the Patriots have the same issues that every other team has, just that Belichick has such a clamp, sort of the dictator of North Korea type clamp on what's going on there. You don't find out about it until 6 or 7 months later. What's his name?
Kim Jong-un.
Did you just compare
Kim Jong-un.
Belichick to
Kim Jong-un?
Yeah. Same haircut.
If the Steelers can get a third-round pick, they'd trade Le'Veon Bell, right?
Well, I think if you hold on to him, you're going to get a third-round pick anyway.
But it's so end of the third round. Get a third-round pick.
I think you want more than that. You start high and see what happens. But
second-round pick, you do it right now, right?
But Le'Veon's got to sign the tender. He ain't going to do that unless he's guaranteed.
Whoever trades for him is going to be willing to give him a contract.
But Le'Veon needs to know that. And some team's going to pay him $16 million a year.
But they still can't give it to him until January.
Right, exactly.
Right,
so,
there's complications.
So many complications. What if the Steelers said, sign it, we've got the trade in place, and then he signed it, and then they didn't trade him?
That'd be awesome. Or what if they traded him for a second-round pick, and the new team had like a handshake agreement where he's going to do the deal? He's like, nah, I'm out, and just did peace on
him. Like, there's so many people who get screwed over in this situation, and it would all be believable.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, the Baltimore top five defenses by points per game right now. Five, the Ravens, 17 points per game. Titans, fourth, Titans, 4, 16.7. Washington Redskins, 14.7, tied with the Jaguars. And then number one, the Los Angeles Rams, who manhandled a poorly run Los Angeles Chargers club on Sunday. I can't really put into words just how vast the gulf is in terms of coaching skill between Sean McVay and Anthony Lynn. And Anthony Lynn, again, probably a nice human. He was down 15 points with 5 minutes to go. I think it's 5 minutes. Maybe it's like 12 minutes to go. But his team has given up 450 total yards. The Rams hadn't punted yet. And he decides to kick a field goal to get down 12. Like, get out of here, bro. Like, what are you doing here? Why are you functionally operating an NFL team if you think that's how you're going to win a game?
You still love the Chargers. I know you didn't pick them, but this is anger that, like, Wilson usually has for the Steelers.
Get out of my head, Sean. Get out of my head. Feels good to be a Chiefs fan, tell you that much.
You know what? Sean McVay, I would take him over probably 30 out of 32 other coaches. If you gave me two equals teams and I had to have a coach to come up with a game plan to beat somebody else on even grounding, I would take McVay.
Would you
take him over Belichick?
I said 30 out of 32, Sean.
Marvin Lewis is the other one.
Thank you.
If you were a Patriots fan, would you trade Bill Belichick for Sean McVay?
Yes.
No.
I would need to know how much longer Belichick's coaching. If he's retiring next year or two, absolutely. If
he's 60, what is he, like 62?
You get
63?
5 years of Belichick.
Like 68.
You get 5 years of Belichick or 30 years of McVay.
I'll take 30 years of McVay.
Sean?
Let me ask you this.
Sean, do you want to fire Bill Belichick?
Do I want to fire Bill Belichick? Why are we talking about this now? No, so, I wouldn't trade McVay for Belichick.
The Lions tonight.
You wouldn't trade Belichick for McVay?
No.
5 years of Belichick, you'd rather have 5 years of Belichick?
If you're going to have this guarantee of Sean McVay's coaching for 30 years, then yes, you do it. But you don't
only
have
30, not 25, though. So if the Rams and Chiefs are playing, I contend that the Rams win the game in the second half because the Chiefs are going to score 50 points in the first half. Is there any way the Chiefs beat the Rams on a neutral field?
The Rams are the best team in football right now.
But Pat Mahomes is not a bad quarterback.
Pat Mahomes is great, and I think the Rams will have trouble stopping. Like the thing about the Chargers is they were able to play against this team, and I think the Chiefs would be fine scoring against them because the Chiefs can bulk up protection on the interior, and I'm not sure that Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters are very good matchups for Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins. And
who is?
Who what?
I said, who is at this point?
Right. But I mean, like Keenan Allen was not doing a ton of damage. But Mike Williams getting wide open on Marcus Peters. He was smoking Marcus Peters repeatedly, having a great game and looked fantastic. I just think that, I mean, they're good cornerbacks, but I think that the strength of the Chiefs matches up for him. The problem is the Rams are just run roughshod through him. Todd Gurley looks exactly like he looked last year. He's having another incredible season. He can't be stopped. Jared Goff has gotten better. Robert Woods had a breakout game this week with 10 catches for 104 yards, two touchdowns. Started him in DFS. Don't worry about it. Brandon Cook still managed seven catches, 90 yards. Gurley had 23 carries for 105 yards. I mean, this team is just loaded at every position except for outside linebacker, and they have enough on the interior to get after you. The Chargers screwed up a bunch of stuff. They had a punt blocked, and, you know, Rivers, I don't know. I mean, the Chargers just do dumb stuff all the time, left and right, so I'm not surprised by it. But the Chargers should have covered here, but the Rams are the best team in football is my takeaway.
I think
are the Chargers going to have any fans left when their stadium opens? That's where I was going. Left. Go, Sean.
That would imply that you have fans now. Like, no, of course not.
I was going to say that I think the scariest thing about the Rams is I think Jared Goff looks better than he did last year. Last year, I thought it was a lot more just McVay creating open throws for him. And I watched that game, and I don't think it was wide open throws. He was making difficult throws downfield. I think he has a very good internal clock in the pocket. Like, I think he manages pressure before it gets there very well. And I think the scary thing, he's not Patrick Mahomes, but I don't think quarterback is a liability at all. And I think last year you could have made the argument that if he's facing the Falcons against Matt Ryan, you might take Matt Ryan. And if Goff has taken the next step, like, suddenly the Rams don't have a weakness on offense.
29 of 36, 354, three touchdowns and one pick. He looked pretty sharp. Yeah, and there's no reason to think he wouldn't take the next step. He took a giant leap last year in his first season with McVay. Why wouldn't he take a big step in the second season with McVay? They have good protection. They run the ball effectively. They put him in a position to succeed. And, I mean, they got the Vikings coming up this week, so that's a good test for him. They play at the Seahawks after that and then at the Broncos. Those are three tough games. But now the 49ers matchup on the 21st of October doesn't look as hard. They get the Packers at home and then the Saints on the road. I mean, this is a rough six-game stretch for the Rams, but I don't see any reason why they don't go 4-2 at the absolute worst.
Not to mention with Garoppolo going down, the division is pretty much over.
The division is – excuse me. The Seahawks could make things interesting, I guess.
Oh, you're going to write off the Cardinals like that?
I am. I am going to write off the Cardinals. And by the way, Seahawks are our last game. Let's talk about that really quickly, and we'll get out of here. Boy, we're running long. It's fine. People like podcasts. Seahawks beat up on the Cowboys. Cowboys are terrible, John. I can't believe you picked them to win the division.
The Cowboys are horrible. If I knew their offense was going to be this bad. See, I'm going to give you my theory real quick in under 10 seconds. It is that
Ezekiel Elliott was high.
Okay, that was half the theory, but I don't want to get thrown off the podcast. But the other half is that Ezekiel Elliott was suspended for 6 games last season. I thought if he comes back, plays all 16 games, that it was going to completely revamp their offense. What I didn't think was going to happen was that, it's such a one-dimensional offense that I think the Cardinals' defense could slow them down all the time. Dak Prescott has no one to throw to. He doesn't look like he knows what he's doing anymore. He got sacked 5 times in the game. They just have no passing game whatsoever. And so teams can just load up and stop Zeke. And the Seahawks didn't even do that, but still the Cowboys offense was bad. So I would like to formally renounce my Cowboys winning the division pick. And in the future, I will announce whether I'm going with the Eagles or the Redskins, but I will need 24 hours to mull it over.
About Zeke, this isn't Zeke's fault. He's actually having the best year of his career. Mike Clay tweeted out that he's averaging 5.7 yards per carry, which is the highest of his career, and he's on pace to total nearly 1,500 rushing yards, which would have led the league last year by more than 130 yards. Like, Zeke is not the problem there. The problem is they don't have a receiver. They should probably think about signing someone named Dez Bryant. That's a joke, Ryan.
This is the most fire you've brought into a podcast in a long time, Sean.
Dez Bryant or Mitch Trubisky, Sean?
Would you trade Mitch Trubisky for Dez Bryant? Would you trade Mitch Trubisky? You don't have to trade
for Dez Bryant because he's sitting at home on Twitter.
Would you trade Mitch Trubisky for Dak Prescott?
No.
Wow, really?
I don't think Dak has looked that great.
He did 2 years ago, though. When's the last time Trubisky looked good?
Never.
Jeez Louise.
We put Sean in a corner.
Never, he said.
Sean's like,
you guys
Sean's...
act like I'm like this big Mitch Trubisky like defender. You are. I'm not. I think it's crazy to write off a quarterback after 3 weeks.
I think.
So what should the Seahawks do with Earl Thomas? Should they extend him or trade him, Sean?
I think they should extend him.
They should cut him right now.
I think if you get rid of him, you are committed to the long rebuild, and it doesn't seem like they want to do that. I mean, Pete Carroll is, what, the second oldest coach in the league? Does he really want to stick around for a rebuild? Maybe that's, like, the logical decision if you're thinking about the next 10 years, but if they want to compete, they can't get rid of Earl Thomas. I think that defense would be a disaster if he's not playing.
With the Seahawks, you look at their schedule, you know, they got this win finally. They're not winless anymore. Four of their next five games are against teams that have a losing record. They're playing 2-0-3 teams, the Cardinals and the Raiders. They've got the Lions. So, you know, this team, they looked horrible the first 2 weeks, but now all of a sudden it's like, hey, they're not out of it, and I kind of like them. I just thought you guys should know. I like the Seahawks now. I'm on the Seahawk bandwagon.
I'm on the Seahawks as well. I wish I hadn't picked them to win the division, but I think they can still be a wild card contender. R.J. White, third name check on this very podcast. Good for him. Lucky you, R.J., has got them winning the Super Bowl on a 60-1 bet. But not as good as my Ravens bet. I'm just going to say that. Anything else you guys want to mention before we get out of here? Ryan's got to wake up in 3 hours.
Yep. Got to use the bathroom, as I often do at 3 in the morning, and then get ready to work while you sleep.
Yeah, Sean has to go pray to his Mitchell Trubisky bobblehead.
Is Ryan Tannehill bobblehead?
Hopefully. Hopefully soon.
All right, guys. Good stuff. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Rate, review, follow Sean J. Wagner at Sean J. Wagner. Follow John Breach at John Breach. And follow Ryan Wilson at Ryan Wilson _07. Thanks, guys.